Do you sell stuff on Amazon, eBay, BigCommerce, your own website? Then you need ShipStation, a popular choice of online sellers across Australia. No matter where you sell, ShipStation automatically imports your orders, making them easier to manage. Plus, they help you get the lowest rates from all the top carriers, including Australia Post. Now you can try ShipStation free for 30 days. Plus, get a special bonus when you use the code SHIPPING. To learn more, go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone and enter shipping.
On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to the verdict.
No one kind of has a go at the authorities that much, do they?
Do have a bone to pick with you.
Stop. It's always about me.
probably in the past 24 hours moved into the background.
What on earth is he talking
about? Oh, he's talking about the media.
Oh, that's what I thought was most impressive about his victory.
Talking through your pocket.
So back
again.
The runner-up.
It's an interesting point you bring up there, and I raised it with...
Absolute folly of track walkers is being highlighted by all these issues at the moment.
The leader had gone off so quick, and it had actually burnt off for the pursuers.
You know, the upside is enormous as to how far he can get.
But all I'm saying, Sam, is that I'm not having a go at the professionalism of the track walkers. I'm just saying that...
Hang on.
Force the owner into the back of a car and drive off in the other direction.
It is the verdict. We do it each and every Monday between 9 and 10 o'clock. And we have Matty Stewart and Mickey Lynch in the studio. How was your weekend, boys?
Well, I'm off the punt.
What, because you cast?
Just the perils of the punt and the perils of the Flemington Strait have combined to produce a month sabbatical for me.
Did you back Spieth?
There was an element of Spieth, and just the whole chaotic circumstance of the Lightning, and I'm not going to keep banging on about track patterns and so on, but it was just a difficult circumstance to find a winner with any confidence, I thought, the Strait on Saturday, so... Yeah, I think sometimes you've just got to back away and look at it as an observer rather than a punter.
We'll see in 7 days whether you've kept to this motto.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty committed for now.
You reckon he'll be on a boat fishing, drinking tinnies next Saturday? Or do you think he'll be
And listening to the races on the radio going, oh, I would have backed that.
I've heard Matty, when he wants to do a diet, they last about 2 days. I'm tipping this will be the same.
Yeah, similar success rate.
So, Matty, you weren't happy with the track. I thought the race itself was outstanding, and yep, you did need to be probably on the inside lanes, which is the opposite of what we've been seeing recently.
Yeah, look, my disclaimer to these continual observations is I wonder whether that the Flemington track is a bit of an untamable beast anyway. Maybe the you know, with the draining and the watering systems that they're consigned to and all these sort of stuff, the factors that contribute to this bias are very difficult for the track staff to deal with, perhaps. But I think what does tend to happen, and I think there's probably an argument for this and an argument against it, is there's a lot of counterbalancing going on with if there's a bias or a perceived bias to one section of the track, I think they work in a way with the technology that they've got, the machinery, to correct it, and, you know, whether it's through verti draining and all this sort of stuff. So what I think tends to go on is a lot of trying to fix something by adjusting the other way, and then suddenly you get a problem that way, and then the bias is on the other part of the track. And what I saw on Saturday was a lane 4 or 5 off from the inside, 7 or 8 in from the outside, squeezy sort of lane there, and anything that was drawn out all day outside that lane towards the middle to the outer of the track was on probably a track rating below those that were in that 5 or 6 metre position. And, you know, you saw that the horses like Seaburge and that later in the day, all those horses that came out wide to make a run just got stuck. They just couldn't make ground. So then that makes it difficult on our premier track, big spacious premier track, if you get to a certain part of that track and then you are at a losing disadvantage. And that's what I saw again on Saturday.
You're shaking your head, Mick.
Well, I'm just saying... The track staff, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yep,
action, they get slaughtered. If they try and modify the conditions, they get slaughtered. The sun shines, the cloud covers, the wind blows, the rain falls. It's an outdoor sport. You have to actually accept there will be variabilities in it. Before the Lightning, there were at least a couple of races, the two-year-old and a sprint handicap down the straight. People could have worked it out, started to look. The smart jockeys work it out, the track walkers work it out. You know, and the other thing is, you don't have to have a bet on a particular race if you don't want to.
Well, but if the track for the whole called? I mean, well, you're saying in the, if the track's playing a certain way, then you're saying you don't have to have a bet on a certain day because it's a factor for the.
Have a bet on a certain day.
Oh well, you know, we are fueled by gambling, so
you're not anymore. Are
no, that's right, and I feel unburdened. But yeah, look, I know what you're saying, and I'm not going to keep kicking track managers because I understand it's a very difficult job and all that sort of stuff. And there are factors. I mean, there was at one point there was a weedy grass that was growing on the inside rail of Flemington. I mean, what do you do about that? So.
But look, what was the feedback? I wasn't trackside on Saturday, but what was the feedback talking to trainers and jockeys on Saturday?
It wasn't
because
it wasn't a feverish reaction.
It didn't seem to be to
see
that bad.
You telling me that you thought
no, the reaction of participants and so forth.
Yeah, I know. I know a lot of trainers who felt that there was a lane and that if you drew a certain part of the track, the horses that were the widest in the Lightning, for instance, they were desperate to try and tuck in because they knew that they couldn't sit in that spot and win. That's what it creates. It creates dramatic shifts of tactics because you have to find yourself in the right lane rather than in the best spot in the race, theoretically.
Isn't all that, though, part of the theatre and the drama and actually why we like it as a sport? Because
I didn't like it when I
walked. Well, if you want to control all the variables, just buy stocks and shares. I mean, they're more controllable.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but outside of what you're saying, there are factors that contribute to bias that probably don't need to be there, you know.
Well, that's a debate, as we said, as I said at the outset, to counter what you're saying. If you do something, you're damned. If you don't do anything,
you're horses like, you know, there's horses like Seaburge and a few others that if you look at that will probably jump out of the ground next start because they seemingly look disappointing, but they were probably at a two-length disadvantage, you know?
Well, maybe, but I spoke to David Hayes about that horse yesterday and he said he just basically was a bit disappointing. I mean, he didn't sort of seem to run his race, whether that was because of where he was or David.
I'm not saying I back Seaburge, but I'm just sort of pointing out one high profile horse that came down.
Well, we've got an SMS here saying, Matt, have you ever walked the track?
I've walked it with Mick Goody, and I understand, and I'm not singling out Mick Goody, and I understand the difficulty. What do I know? What do you and I know? We range in weight, the three of us, between my 75 kilos and Michael's 95 plus. I'm not going to pretend that me walking the track is going to tell me where the best place to be is. Just because something feels better underfoot doesn't necessarily make it race that way either. Like, I know there's a lot of track walkers out there. Some of them, I think, are very astute judges. Others, I think, have got no idea what they're doing. They're just getting some exercise. A lot of them have completely different views. Now, look, me walking the track doesn't mean I'm able less or more entitled to observe track bias. I don't see the connection between that.
It's a never-ending story. We'll have it again when it comes to the Newmarket Handicap. So let's talk about the race itself and the drama pre-race. We've got to give kudos to the barrier attendants because they have a thankless task each and every Saturday. You speak to the jockeys and they're almost heroes to them, what they do, because it's their lives that are on the line in a steel contraption. And for that, when we saw the quarterback going off its head, I feared, for the horse and the jockeys, what they were able to do to get the horses out unscathed. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, it was a terrific performance by all the staff involved there. And as you said, Michael, all three have come out relatively unscathed, and Fatnar is probably likely to go around next Saturday in the Oakley Plate, and Sean Matherick's horse probably goes to a 9.55 at the Valley. But yeah, it was a terrific performance by them. I just wondered, when all this drama was happening, why they just didn't open up the gates and take them all out. And let them mill around for 2 or 3 minutes, make sure that those that were going to be scratched had those vetted, and then when everything had been cleared, loaded them up again and at least gave those in the stalls a chance to relax.
I think that's a valid point.
Well, I suppose it happens in such quick real time, though, that you think, well, the
time pressure.
The difficulty of You need a barrier attendant for every horse to get them out without them scooting off or something, I'd imagine. And then you're thinking, well, how long is this going to last, this thing going off in barrier 13? I know what you're saying.
I just feel that with equine welfare and, you know, the way that story, that race would have... I didn't see the TV news because I was still coming back from the track, but I assume the drama of the Lightning, what would have been on the television wasn't the race finished so much as all the aggro at the start, right? And I just think, in the current climate, it just would have been a better look as well. Bring them all out. Now, I understand there's probably time pressures there because of the clock and the need for gambling and revenue turnovers to have races jump in on time. But there are extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah. And the guy who's about to join us can A, talk about whether that's logistically possible, and B, I think, and hopefully Maddie slash Max Allen will be able to tell, I think the pony, blonde ponytailed barrier attendant who is now a hero, is, I think his name's Eli.
Yeah, they said that.
Yeah. Robert Griffin said that, didn't he? Maddie, as he joins us, can tell us about his role and what happened.
Well, Maddie, thanks for taking the time to have a chat to us on The Verdict. First of all, what was going through your mind, and can you try to describe for the listeners what it's like to be in the barriers when a horse like the quarterback is going off like it did on Saturday?
Yeah, morning, guys. Yeah, it can be quite frightening. I mean, I was, as it turned out, I'm quite lucky how it turned out for me. The reason, this horse, he can get a little bit wound up in the barriers. Usually, he's never gone off that bad, but I always get one of the barrier boys up over his head and just get him to put his head in their lap so the last that goes in and then sort of straighten him up at the last minute. But on Saturday, this horse, I mean, we had him pretty much well enough to run in a 1,000-metre race. I mean, he had to be pretty fresh, as you know, to get that horse. But, I mean, he gets back and gives him a big start over 1,200. So there's a fine line between having him fresh enough to run a 1,000 but not fresh enough that he's going to play up. So it was quite a fine line, but he would have been all right. But the last horse went in, we had hold of him. I had a man on his head and a man on his tail. And the last horse went in, and if they let him go at that point, he would have been fine. But Noel Callow went in, and his horse wasn't quite standing right, and he called out to the starter just to wait a minute. And then his horse moved and made just the slightest noise, and that just set my bloke off. He went up. He was unlucky, though, because if it hadn't rained, I think he would have gone up and come straight back down.
I was going to ask you, was the greasiness of the track with that rain just before the race, was that a factor in him crashing down?
Yeah, because he went vertical. He went all the way up, and then he lost his back leg, and then he just went straight down his bum. And then once he went down like that, he just panicked, and all hell broke loose after that. I was just lucky that my legs came down at the back of the barriers. I took a bit of skin off my shin. If my legs had gone down inside the barriers with the horse and I'd have fallen down there, then it would have been a lot of trouble.
Tell us about Eli and the guys like him and the significance of him approaching the front of the stalls, because I spoke to Glenn Robinson-Smith, the vet, and he said in similar circumstances, horses have broken their backs when they've tried to struggle and wriggle their way out the front, and he was instinctive enough, Eli, to make sure the horse was corralled in the barriers?
Yeah, I don't know what those guys get paid, but I'm pretty sure it's not enough. I saw that footage on the news later on Saturday night, and just for him to think to do that, I mean, he's a 580-kilogram horse that's pinned under a metal construction, and to go and grab his head without a bridle on it, it's a pretty brave thing to do for a start, and just a smart thing to do just to get him to relax, because you know, as soon as he went and grabbed it, looked like the horse relaxed. So I think the owner would be buying him a nice drink, I'd say.
Well, it's quite remarkable that he seems to have come. We spoke to Robbie Griffiths this morning. He said that he's a little battered and bruised, but he feels it's remarkable how well he's come through it. He's on anti-inflammatories, and we know he's got a trial to the satisfaction. But at this stage, the new market's still on the table.
Yeah, well, I wrote him up. I tried him up this morning when took him for a little canter, and he actually surprised me of how good he felt. So when I was watching him the other day, Saturday, underneath there, struggling to get out. I didn't think I'd be riding him this morning. So he's come out of it quite well, and at least he's got enough time to be able to do that. I think we're going to try him up on him just to settle him down, and hopefully that works. He's still right to run the new market.
Maddie, I mean, horses are, you know, highly strung creatures. In your experience, if this has ever happened to you before or you've seen it, does it have a kind of psychological impact? Is that a concern that next time, I know that's what the barrier trial will be about, but are you concerned that the horse will remember this bad experience?
They usually do remember it. I mean, it's not ideal. Yeah, some horses are all right and they can go back and be no worries, but other horses that can stick with them pretty much forever. I mean, this horse to ride is usually a quiet horse. He can be funny, though. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a Group 1 sprinter, and they're quite explosive. And most horses you'll see, their first up run, they're always a little bit above themselves. Even if you look at Flying Art, he played up a little bit once the ruckus started, and then even over race first up. And most horses sort of go into their second up run, once they've had a first up run, they just got that edge off them and they're just a bit more relaxed. So hopefully this horse can get him in my song, can go on trial and get his ticket and have a nice blowout and just be cherry ripe for the new market.
Just a quick one before we let you go. Just from an outside perspective, just interested on your on the view of the, in the jockey's room and before the race about what your tactics may have been and how the track was playing, and then even with an eye to the biggest race up the straight of all, the Newmarket, about just the asterisk that we think about with the straight these days about where how it's been prepared and where the best place might be. What was the view on Saturday about the track and the straight and with an eye to maybe the Newmarket?
Yeah, well... funny you say that, because last couple of times I've ridden this horse down the straight, I've drawn inside, which has been the wrong part of the track. And then after I gave the horse his final gallop on Tuesday, or Monday, was I said to Robbie, all we've got to do to be at some sort of chance in that 1,000-metre race is draw out. And the fields came out, and we drew 12 or 13, so I was rubbing my hands together and then watched a couple of races, and it was apparent to me, anyway, that it wasn't the place to be. The perfect way to ride this horse is how he won the Newmarket. He just sat back last, came to the outside, one run. And that's how we were going to ride him originally. But then the way the track was playing, I said, well, maybe it's better off cutting right back to the inside and follow. There's all the good horses are drawn back on the inside. We'll try and follow one of them and get the runs. You know, whoever we're following is going to give us a good card in the race. I mean, if I was in that race still, it probably wouldn't have panned out. I probably would have been behind Terra Vista, who only got through late, and I probably would have run a good fifth or something. But my view on that, with the straight race, I think if you think back 20 years ago, or whenever it was, before they started moving rails around, you never used to see track bias. I think it's more so now these days they move the rails in and out, and they're starting to water, you know, trying to even it up. If they just left the rail in the one spot and then let riders go wherever they want to go, I don't think it'd be an issue.
Well, Maxie, it's a conundrum, but it's one of the great variables of this grade. The main thing, the most important thing, is that both you and the quarterback are fit and ready to fight another day. Hopefully, we'll get to see you both back together on Newmarket Day.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We just hope to get through this trial, which I'm sure we will, and yeah, onward and upward.
Good on you, Maxie. Maxie Allen, who's joined us. Interesting. A lot of Twitter talk on Saturday, a little bit akin to what you were saying, Mick, about Flying Artie, because during the commotion, it was lost that he actually reared up and Ollie got catapulted out the back.
Yeah, I hardly noticed it at the time, yeah.
Now, this is what Terry Bailey had to say yesterday on Correct Weight about the Flying Artie situation and whether he should have been vetted.
Yeah, look, there's a lot happening. He probably should have been vetted too, but everyone was focused on the three out wide. But the horse pulled up okay, was vetted after the race, and obvious abnormalities were found. But yeah, it certainly fractures in the gates as well, which may have contributed to the performance.
Every horse, oh, well, not everyone, but that the incident behind the barriers and the rattling of the barriers and all that sort of stuff and how it unsettled, it put a gigantic question mark on the whole race. Three or four of the horses, the jockeys that I spoke to, said what happened behind the gates stuffed their horse in the race. Mm. They either over-raced Heatherly, Flying Artie was trying to stare at aeroplanes flying overhead the whole time, and there was others, and then there was others. You know, so it was the template for the race was set behind the barriers, and that's the way it played out. And I was standing in the mounting yard, and the first thing I saw was the strapper of the quarterback facing the other way, distraught, being comforted. And then you look at the TV screen or the big screen, and you just see this thrashing about. You see Ollie pop out, you see the quarterback's feet, and then his head poke underneath, and Eli running over. And so it was just a race where the thing that happened before the race started affected the actual race.
Well, doesn't that go to my point? They should have all been taken out, and perhaps even all of them. The vets had a quick check of them. I know that would have probably delayed the start by 10 minutes, but, you know, this was an extraordinary circumstance. And this wasn't, you know, with all respect to every other race that's run there, this wasn't a sort of, you know, 0-80 handicap. This was one of the premier Group 1 sprint races. On the back of this race, horses are getting invites to Hong Kong, to Royal Ascot, to Japan. You know, maybe Terry should have sort of pulled rank in his chief steward role.
As he said, though, there was so much focus on the distraught horse that they couldn't look at it. Froggy Newitt's a listener, and and I want Froggy to answer the question you just asked, Lynchy, about whether they could logistically have got all the horses out. So, Froggy, now that you're on the texting, and Froggy just endorsed the role that he said, without doubt, the best barrier attendants in the world, not only in Australia, are the ones in Melbourne, and particularly Eli. So we got the best people behind the gates.
And just a full stop on Flying Artie. Mick Price this morning has said that he seems to be fine. He's pulled up okay. The question mark now is who will ride in the Newmarket and what weight he'll get. If Damien Oliver can't make the weight in the Newmarket, Mick Price has said he'll be putting an invitation out to Joe Marrera to ride Flying Artie in the Newmarket.
When do the weights come out? Because the interesting thing
Tuesday,
is
I believe.
Terra Vista. Like, I think it's a million to one that Chautauqua will run, but it doesn't mean he won't be top weight. You know, in the original weights, and then everything
will
else.
Will be entered.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, but that will affect a lot of things, won't it?
Just a quick one before we move on. We've got to talk about the winner, Terra Vista. Great training performance by Joe Pride. And, gee, my heart was breaking again for Bryce Hayes with Spieth. Maybe it'll be a blessing in disguise, and he'll get his time to shine in the Newmarket.
Well, the story behind the scenes, well, I think Bryce is probably a bit of a heart on the sleeve bloke anyway, but he's got 8 horses in work. The Wolves are at the door, like they are with a lot of trainers. If the horse had won the Daly or won the Lightning, the studs would have come up to him and his mates, his owners, and said, "Righto, this is an $8 million horse," and there would have been a financial sort of situation which could have given him some breathing space. But at the moment, there's all those things are hanging in the air. So I think the reason why he gets so upset is because
it's a life changing.
He needs the money.
Moment. Yeah. Well, that was
simple
his,
as that.
It was his 9th runner since the Daly. Like that since November. Spieth on Saturday was his 9th runner. That shows the scale that his operation is working on.
Yeah. It also perhaps so few horses, and it shows what a good job he's doing actually with this one superstar that he's got, or potential superstar. And as you say, I think it is a very much a cash flow matter of life and death for him in fiscal terms. You know, he's a young trainer and he just needs the money really.
And we love opinions on the verdict, so keep sending them through. Quite a lot of email and SMS response.
With a smirk on his face. They're all a certain theme, these ones he's going to read out.
You could say that. Any sporting turf surface will always have variables. Doesn't matter if it's cricket, golf, lawn, bowls, tennis, horse racing. I'm in the turf trade and it annoys me to no end. Have a whinge, Stuart, you flog. If you watched racing.com in the morning, they told everyone the inside was on. That's from Peter. You talk about improving races. Get Matt Stuart to become positive instead of always being negative about nearly everything he does. You've just said you've got no idea, but you're happy to say the track is stuffed. Get Mick Goody on to talk about it. If he won't come on, I understand after the way Matt's banged on about him. Every punter knows since time immemorial that horses drawn the inside are favoured when there's a strong southwest wind. Horses drawn on the outside are favoured when there's a strong northerly. So what's the problem? That's from Bob. As usual, Matt and Michael are looking for reasons and stories that aren't there. It's horse racing, barriers, Flemington straight racing. There will always be something. The main question to me is why don't horses go full bore? It's meant to be a sport. We're meant to be a sprint, and the jockeys are holding up their horses, looking at each other. Now, that is a valid point. Why down the straight?
I was very positive about the fact that I'm going fishing next Saturday. How more positive could I possibly have been?
That last tweeter, I mean, I've virtually said what he's just said, that it is an outdoor sport, that there's a lot of variables. That's why we should enjoy it. But I think his last point's very interesting, actually, because you watch a 100-metre sprint or a 200-metre sprint. I mean, Usain Bolt does save a little bit for the final kick if he needs it, but they do tend to perhaps run more even sectional, shall we say, in a person's 100-metre race than they sometimes do.
More so up the straight. They looking, always sit up the straight.
Yeah, they're looking around up the straight, aren't they?
I didn't say
the
track was stuffed. Anyway, look, yeah, I take on those things on board, and I think we all have to make efforts in life to be more positive than negative.
You have come in very flat today.
Well, it won't be next week because I'll have a couple of barramundi for you.
question, do we know if Limestone's connections are paying the late entry fee for the
paying.
Diamond? No, they're
paying.
Not. David Moody's made that announcement. So Limestone won't be paying up. Property is paying up. Barrier draws tomorrow at 11 o'clock. It's going to be an intriguing barrier draw for what will be a very exciting and open Blue Diamond, I think.
Especially off the back of what happened last year with Ollie and Flying Artie and Extreme Choice, and he went with Flying Artie and then the barriers came out, and I think Flying Artie drew 16 and Extreme Choice drew 3 or 4. But it was interesting hearing Ollie on the radio the other day, I think with you, Michael, where he said it wasn't really the barrier that beat him. He said, I could have overcome that, but there was an incident in the race that wasn't particularly, you know, related to it. So
it's not just the horses in the race, is it? We've got Joe Moreira and Ryan Moore, two of the claimants to the title of World's Best Jockey coming as well.
Speaking of Ryan Moore, I believe it's not set in concrete at the moment which horse Ryan Moore or Damien Oliver will be riding. Coolmore will make that decision today, obviously before the barrier draw. So at this stage, most people have been expecting Ryan Moore to ride Tulip and Ollie on formality. That may well be the case, but a final decision is still to be made.
Ollie's due for a change of luck, I reckon. I think what's happened with Damien, who's probably the best jockey I've seen in Melbourne, he lost that momentum during the Spring Carnival. Then he went to Perth. He just seems like a champion jockey who's just looking for a bit of rhythm at the moment. And Flying Artie would have been a nice little turnaround of his fortunes on Saturday, but that went the wrong way. And I just think he's in an interesting position now where he's got to claw his way back to where he's been. And a lot of it's due to cattle. You know, I see he's riding a lot of 25-1 chances for smaller stables. And I did a story on the other day where he said, he conceded, yeah, well, with the dominance of Weir and Hayes, he said, look, I've got a foot in the door with those guys a bit. But he said, but I don't really ride for them regularly. So there's factors around Damien Oliver at the moment that are testing his status as, you know, the automatic top dog in town. And yeah, it's just interesting. I'm not saying he's out of form or anything like that. I'm just saying that he's in a position where he just needs a few things to go his way.
Maybe it's just part of the cycle of life and the changing of the guard. I mean, he's a fantastic jockey and proven, as you said, over 3 decades. But he is now in his middle 40s. Younger guys, Damien Lane is on fire and coming through. And, you know, the young apprentices get a lot of rides, certainly in the handicaps on the best ones. It's
last
just
week,
that cycle.
On the Inner Sanctum, he said that he's now thinking about the end and what he'll do post riding, whether it's a career in media. So I think probably when you see Darren Gauchy eventually hang up the saddle, someone like the Gouch who continues going on for so long, you go, well, hang on, we need to start thinking about this. Before we move on from Flemington, I want to talk about a few other performances. Hey, Doc, Patrick Smith, who's a mate of ours and a media, he's got a good horse.
He has indeed, hasn't he, Big Pat?
I can't. How many times was he whipped?
Oh, it's a funny thing. I was just thinking because I was talking to him afterwards and he said, oh, gee, he's going to need everything to go his way to run a strong 1,600 metres in the Guineas because he trucks along that horse. And I was just thinking, I wonder what Patrick will be mumbling under his breath at the 200 if Haydock needs a bit of urging to get over the line.
But isn't he just, he's the model horse you'd love to own. He jumps out, puts himself on the speed. He seems pretty uncomplicated. He's had 11 starts already, which is a lot more than a lot of three-year-olds at this stage have had. Proved himself Group 1 competitive, probably not even at his best distance. Tony McAvoy seems to think 1,400 will be his go. In some ways, like in Sydney, there seems to be more of those 1,300 to 1,500 type races, so we might see him up there later in his career.
Well, who can beat him? Is it just a case of Haydock beating himself, or is there another three-year-old that can beat him? He's currently a $4 favourite, and then you're out to $11 for coming through Morton's Fork, Divine Prophet, out to $13. So
Divine Prophet's the interesting one because he was pretty awful. I was on him in the awe, and this is another reason why I'm a fisherman now. This is, you know, Mr. Negativity trying to put a positive spin. You look at that market, where's Seaburge, where's Inside Agent, all the horses that have an O beside their name that ran on the track yesterday who maybe were in a part of the track that wasn't beneficial.
I thought you were being positive.
Trying to be. That's the advantage for these punters now that they can probably look at certain things that might have happened on certain tracks and look ahead and get good odds about horses that maybe should have finished.
And Sosa Bond's an interesting runner as well. What did he make of his run? Because I know you were super confident about it.
And the other one I'd liked in that race won it, of course. Just in retrospect, if he's going to run second up in the Guineas, was hiking along up the straight and fading out of it the ideal lead into the Guineas second up for Sosa Bond? Not really sure that experiment completely worked on Saturday with Sosa Bond.
I was going to say, it was an interesting strategy running a three-year-old against the older handicap.
Not an issue with the three-year-old factor, just the whether running up the straight in a sit-up and sprint race is necessarily, in retrospect, whether it turned out the right way.
Tucumis was the other big performance of the day, the two-year-old in the Talent Dirt, and we know he was very wayward. I think the protest obviously was the correct decision. They'd have, well, the grandstand's already been torn down, but if that had been upheld, what did you think?
Well, I just think there's still a lot of people in Australia who don't quite understand the mentality of protests and what the protocols are. So there's no way in the world that could have been upheld, because the winner shot past the Hayes horse at a million miles an hour. There is no way in the world that there was an argument that at the time it happened that the Hayes horse was going well enough when they were hitting stride to have beaten the other horse. It wouldn't have mattered if the Hayes horse had been put through the running rail. He couldn't have won the protest because he wasn't going to beat the other horse.
Would he have won that protest if he'd finished second, not third? Would he have had a stronger
margin.
Argument? The
no,
margin?
That was the margin.
So we can be as exact as that when we're looking at it, can we?
You can with your eye, because
the premise
horse
of a protest, the interference cost it the race. So,
is it cost it the race or cost it its chance to win the race?
No, it's about whether it would have beaten the other horse bar for the interference.
Yeah. So, and there's no way
in the
if
world
they
you
race
make that
straight,
argument,
the second horse would have beaten
not
the winner.
A chance in the world. But it doesn't mean that the jockey can't cop 14 meetings or 10 meetings or whatever. So it's a separate argument. It's not the same thing. The only one that the stewards completely mucked up in this way was Schwarzier in 2002, when it with 61.5 on its back or something, it flew past Blur and
Planchette.
I still think they got the Palantino one wrong.
Well, I'm going back to Awesome Rock, but the one with Schwarzier was a terrible mistake by the stewards, because they attributed an incorrect margin. They said, "Oh, well, this thing, it hip and shouldered this thing and nearly put it through the rail, and it cost us 2.5 lengths, and the margin was 2 lengths." They got the maths wrong, and that's the mistake they do make is when they
back
get the
maths
wrong.
Our poetic prince in the court.
Yeah, but when they say the interference cost a horse 2 lengths and the margin was 1.25 lengths, an effortless margin, They're getting the maths wrong. They're attributing wrong equations to interference.
But having said that, I mean, you know, take nothing from the winner who looks like a very promising type.
And he's there a sale topper at last year's English Premier.
Yeah, that's right, 700,000, bought by Hong Kong interests, and I think this is their first horse in Australia, and it was the subject of some fairly significant wagering, I understand, as well. So,
yeah, backed off the map. It's probably arguable, but the performance of the weekend for mine was She Will Reign's win in the Silver Slipper. For those, I think she got into something like $1.40, $1.35. And if you took that, which, Maddie, you won't be in the future because you're on a punting hiatus, you would have been absolutely furious at the start. But the way Ben rode her, gee, that was a cool, calm ride. And she, for mine now, is without doubt the one to beat in the Slipper.
Well, whether she's a $3 chance with a month to go, though, that's the issue, isn't it? No, I was being negative again on Saturday. I was sitting there in the press room as they moved in the barriers, and I said to a couple of the other press, I said, $1.40, I mean, there's a bit of untested waters in this race and how good the other ones are and all that sort of stuff. And then when she missed the start, I smugly looked to a couple of them and said, well, there's your $1.40. And then all the gaps did come, and he didn't lose momentum. So there was a lot of positives out of the win, but it did sail through and in uninterrupted passage. But it was a massive win. There's no doubt about that. But
You know,
as you say, Mellum's a very cool rider.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a point that needs to be emphasised. Okay, it wasn't a huge field of six opponents, I think, but Ben Mellum kept his cool, didn't panic, knew he was on the best horse, probably, and rode it accordingly. And, you know, in the end, it was pretty soft and easy win, wasn't it?
It wasn't very a brilliant impressive ride. There was someone in the press room saying, oh, what a ride. It was just the ride of a sensible senior jockey. I mean,
a crazy
jockey would have hunted it up.
How many sensible senior jockeys in that circumstance, you
know, $1.40 pop.
Win to get into the Slipper, twos on favourite.
Most of the sensible senior jockeys would have ridden it similarly, I would have thought.
Well, you'd hope so, but we also have seen in the past that they don't always.
No, that's true.
All right, well, the ratings guru, Dan O'Sullivan, joins us now. Daniel, thanks for having a chat to us on The Verdict. What did you make of the win on Saturday?
Oh, good morning, boys. I think it was every bit as impressive as it looked. I had a look and sort of lined up the, you know, the speed measurements out of the race and the sectionals and things like that. And I'm normally the first person to look when you see something on the track that's visually impressive. I'm the first person to look at the figures underneath to sort of try and identify those ones that don't have the substance to match what you see to the eye. But in this case, She Will Reign, look, she was outstanding and showed, I guess, some versatility. So that's a positive from a Slipper perspective. Look, she missed the start, obviously, and it wasn't a quickly run race. They went sort of quite moderately in front, so that was, you know, where quite a lot of merit coming in her performance and the speed she showed over the final stages. Look, particularly between the 600 and the 200, her turn of foot and top speed there was electrifying, and then she was able to sustain it over the final sort of furlong to win. But look, it was every bit as impressive as it looked. I think she's without a doubt deserves to be the top ranked 2 year old in Australia at the moment. A
couple of things. How does that equate to the price she is with a month to go? Also with an Ida Hootson, the other one that's dominated up there. And how much more dominant is She Will Reign than the mob of 2 year olds that are going around at Caulfield on Saturday in the Diamond?
Look, in terms of the price a month out, I mean, you can argue that the $3 is probably a bit shorter. It's really a personal sort of speculative thing. I don't really see any point taking that price now. I think on the day you're probably going to get, you know, something similar to that or not much less, and you're mitigating all that risk about what happens between now and then. Look, I think Hootson is certainly the next best two-year-old. She is, if you just look at overall time, she's been the fastest two-year-old so far. That's courtesy because she does roll along in front. In the Magic Millions, she did go very, very quickly. Not many other two-year-olds have sort of had the opportunity to, I guess, perform off that type of hot pace. And I think just with the way we measure things, had, you know, She Will Reign was to get that sort of hot pace and sit just off it, I think she'd, you know, probably edge Hootson. But Hootson is definitely right up there as well. Whether she can lead and win a slipper, I'm not too sure. But there's plenty of others, look, not that far behind them. So I still think it's you know, a relatively open race, the slipper, especially with She Will Reign's habit of missing the kick.
Well, She Will Reign, Hootson, from the slipper perspective, just quickly, I know the barrier draws tomorrow. Who is the leading rater for the Diamond?
I think Catchy is. Well, she is on you know, exposed performance ratings, and I think the market pretty much has the ranking right at the moment, although I'm a little bit sort of lower on a horse like Jukebox, for example. But the thing with Catchy is she just showed in that last win that she looks to have, you know, quite a good deal of scope to sort of step up and further increase her performance in a 1,200-metre race, especially one that's genuinely run. A couple of her sort of key indicators over the finish and especially her sort of strength through the line, not only visually but also in a speed sense, was super impressive. And I think she goes into the Blue Diamond really with the ideal profile from a form but also a figures perspective. I guess if there is a query, she does lack a bit of early speed. So if she was to draw, you know, barrier one or two or something like that, then I think that could end up being a huge problem for her. But that aside, just on the surface, I think she's the horse to beat.
Well, Dan, appreciate you taking the time and the verdict. We'll touch base with you post the Blue Diamond and the lead up to the Golden Slipper as well.
Excellent. Cheers, guys.
Daniel just, O'Sullivan there.
Yeah, quick. Brent Avdullah was the first jockey to come out and put a negative spin on She Will Reign, saying, oh, she wouldn't want to do that in the Golden Slipper and win it. But I had a good chat to Ben Malham yesterday, and he said, look, it's not a recurring trait necessarily. He said, I'd be backing her not to do that again, he said. So if you think that that's a negative on the favourite a month out, then the jockey's saying, look, he doesn't think it will be.
I think the only negative on her is the price at the moment. You know, when you're, I mean, a week can be a lifetime in a two-year-old's preparation, and a month, so much can go wrong. You're taking 3-1 now. As Daniel said, you're probably
taking 2-1.
Yeah, $3. So you'll get that or better on race day. And missing the start, yeah, it is an issue, but it can be done. Belle du Jour?
Yeah, well, she did. She more than missed the start.
Missed it by about five lengths.
Hootson, I would imagine Hootson and She Will Reign will find each other in the... Will they find each other in the Riesling?
I believe Hootson's going to have its lead-up run in Brisbane.
Right.
I think that's the indication. So I think the first time they'll meet will be on Slipper Day. Just quick, we've got to take our final break, but the other interesting part is the Scott Darby phenomenon, how he had Yankee Rose for 10,000 last year.
He's blessed, isn't he?
Well, I didn't realise that he had such a spiritual connection, and he's put a lot of the success down to God.
Yes, that's right.
Well, I think that's why you're not backing any winners, Matty.
I'm not a G-man. I'm just, well, you know, these days, it's very unusual to hear someone open about that sort of thing, because it's an unusual thing these days.
He says he moves in his mysterious ways, his wonders to perform, and hopefully for Scott Darby it will continue. But yeah, we shouldn't knock a guy who has faith and is prepared
to
be sceptical. I mean, it's not fashionable, particularly in modern society.
And it's difficult for God to concentrate on so many things, including the yearling selections of a particular syndicate
That's
owner.
Very true, but here's a bloke who's prepared to bear witness. I mean, if it was up people from other faiths saying it, I don't think there'd be anybody with their eyebrows raised.
Matty, I think you should take a leaf out of his book. You need salvation. only got a couple of minutes left, guys, but one of the most entertaining, I suppose, parts of the weekend has been a lot of Twitter reaction to the Everest advertising campaign, or the first ad they've put out. A quick snapshot for those who haven't seen it. Get online. I think Sky Racing has tweeted it out. It's a... how would you describe it? It's
South
a cartoon.
Park sophisticated graphics of a horse sort of galloping up a mountain and then rain falls on its head at the top.
With some elevator music.
I know, it reminds me of one of those really cheap kind of local regional ads you see in a cinema somewhere in the country. You know, cartoon graphics and sort of, you know, cards with information on it just inserted by hand.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put... Mr. Negative is going to find a positive out of something that everyone else says is negative. I wonder whether, if this is the first teaser, it's basic, whether things that we don't understand about the power of marketing and advertising, about A, we're talking about it, and B, this might be the first ad and the ads will become better and more sophisticated and so on. I mean, I don't like the concept of the Everest, but I wonder whether there might be an advertising mentality with an ad. Like, so if Todd Sampson was sitting here, he may well be saying, aha, this is what you guys don't understand.
It's the first stage in getting you all talking about it by producing something that's totally crap to get you all really interested in debating it. Maybe. You know.
Well, we tried to get Darren Pearce. Unfortunately, he's busy because he's got his crayons out.
He's doing the sequel.
We wanted to find out which primary school put the proposal together, but we haven't been able to get hold of him. A couple of quick things. Michael Walker, he's seen Dr. Gary Zimmerman at 1:45 today. Gee, I hope he gets a positive report. But from what we saw on Friday night, you've got to say there's got to be a question mark over how much longer he can continue.
Parallel story with Nick Hall for me too. You know, the rigors of racing and the hip injuries and bone on bone. And with Walker, it's a back, and he survived a pig falling on his head in New Zealand many years ago. And whether it all catches up with these guys, you know?
Yeah, well, he certainly has been through the wars, Michael, because didn't he have surgery at the end of the carnival before last? And, you know, he's in a bad way. And, you know, one can only hope that the surgery works. But I guess it's, you know, a lot of sports, a lot of people get stress fractures and injuries. We see it in cricket. I forget, was it Cummings, the bowler? The fast
Paddy
bowler?
Cummings.
Paddy Cummings, who's hardly played. Bruce Reid, a generation before, a fantastic quick bowler. I mean, it's very unfortunate, but it kind of goes with the turf, doesn't
it? Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And I've done a piece today in the paper tying in a lot of these things of just how fickle and quick it can be over, and injuries and near death and all that sort of stuff, and the stuff that happened with the quarterback and the injuries, these weird injuries to these jockeys, and then the Josh Cartwright situation in Perth, where, you know, what he did
Adelaide
was unprecedented in its recklessness and all that. But, you know, and I think that the stewards have set themselves an awkward precedent, the worst crime imaginable with a soft punishment. So the precedent issue there is one thing. But I also think that there's a... and they could have given him 10 years, because the kid said he didn't want to ride anyway. So you may as well give him 10 years.
But then I spoke to his lawyer last week and he said, no, he definitely wants to come back.
Well, I don't know about that, as it's a hard sell. So,
you know, he's... I think we've all agreed, though, that part of the leniency or, so, you know, what looks like leniency for that that crime was because there was an acceptance that he was in a fragile... he was kind of mentally ill. So if he says, well, he's kind of mentally ill, I don't want to ride again, we don't know, do we?
He may want
to come back. So maybe they've given him an 18-month ban to fix himself up and then reconsider it. I mean, when he reapplies to get a license, they don't have to give it to him.
Do you want to be the steward that really wrecked his life by giving him the irreversible penalty? And
that's what I was saying,
with the connection to the quarterback and these other jockeys and Josh Cartwright, is it's such a stressful sport where so much can go wrong. And I think the stewards are thinking, well, this guy's almost a victim of this sport too,
well,
in a way, and what he put himself
through. It's become that way because it's become the poker machine sport, hasn't it? I mean, you know, 30 years ago, Roy Higgins and the great champion jockeys, they were only riding 2 meetings a week, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
And look, I think well done to Josh too, because it would have been a difficult situation, but he's put himself out there media-wise post, so hopefully now he can have the time to get himself right. And, well, the suspension says he could be back training in 6 months and riding in 18 months. A couple of quick ones before we go too. Pakistan Star, what a brilliant run that was. It was a great race last night behind Rapid Dragon, who is a rising star in Hong Kong. Hats Aiken has tweeted, tell Matty he better be starting to grow that beard, because you better bet with Hats Aiken, so the Pakistan Star would be no hope and he wouldn't be one of the favourite runners in the Hong Kong Derby.
There was a communication error. And I'm happy to abide by what was actually stated with the original bet, but I kind of assumed it was whether he would win the Derby or not, but then I looked at the fine print of what Hats Aitken set through mischievously, and it was whether he started one of the favourites in the Derby, and I thought, how on earth I agreed to that, because I hate beards. They itch, make me itchy.
So we're going to start
trying to get
Jimmy
back
Bartel
out the dating scene, as you know, and I need all the help I can get, and being clean-shaven is one of the things I hope to bring to the table. So,
it was a decent run when he's second to Rapper Dragon, as you said, who's a you know, odds-on favourite yesterday and a real star.
He's still a money muncher, Pakistan star.
Yeah, but I see here he went round at $10 and he was second favourite
exactly
yesterday.
Just thought of a new segment too, which we'll bring up on the verdict in a few weeks, is Maddie's dating segment. He's put himself out there on the market.
Short segment.
We might be able to...
With a couple of unusual twists.
Oh, dearie me.
You need everything to go your way in the race, don't you?
I do. I need to find the fast lane in life.
We're out of time, but just a quick one. This Friday, it's going to be a big day for the VRC because for the first time in maybe 153 years, they'll have their board meeting to decide whether Amanda Elliott becomes the first female chairman of the VRC.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful lady. Be a great historical moment if she could achieve it, but nothing's a given in life. There's a couple of strong candidates as well, I believe, but best of luck to Amanda on Friday.
Looking forward to tomorrow on Open Mic, Racing's Open Mic. Kevin Sheedy will be in the studio for the hour. Perfect timing. Blue Diamond, of course, with Bel Esprit and the sales coming up at Inglis with the Black Caviar connection as well. So don't miss Sheeds, boys. It's been good fun having you in the studio. Mick, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Matty, we'll see you again next week. And we did have some positive feedback about you. A caller has rung in and said, I actually quite like Matt. He helps us find the winner.
This is sounding good so far.
Anything he tips, we put a line through.
Oh, well, there you go.
Enjoy your day. We'll be back on Racing Pulse tomorrow from 8:30.
Do you sell stuff on Amazon, eBay, BigCommerce, your own website? Then you need ShipStation, a popular choice of online sellers across Australia. No matter where you sell, ShipStation automatically imports your orders, making them easier to manage. Plus, they help you get the lowest rates from all the top carriers, including Australia Post. Now you can try ShipStation free for 30 days. Plus, get a special bonus when you use the code SHIPPING. To learn more, go to ShipStation.com, click on the microphone and enter SHIPPING.